It's a scandal that has rocked the quad and has shaken the ivy off of some old statues. Do you think we'll see any changes? Or is this just the scandal du jour? Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. As always, we welcome your comments. You can find us on Twitter at FullStoryWSHU. We all know the particulars of the college admissions scandal. There's really no reason to go over it today. But just yesterday, and you talk about timing, the Harvard Graduate School of Education released a report about college admissions. It was from the Making Caring Common Project. The report is called Turning the Tide 2, How Parents and High School Students Can Cultivate Ethical Character and Reduce Distress in the College Admissions Process. We have the head author of Turning the Tide 2 with us, Rick Weisbord. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us today.
Oh, it's great to be here.
We have a lot to talk about, but before we do that, I have to get your reaction to the news. What's your take?
I was somewhat surprised by the length of it, the length that these folks went and how bad it was, how egregious it was. But I think these things are really pretty rare. I think the more concerning thing is they reveal a deeper problem, which is the system is so inequitable. It's just so unfair. And there are a lot of people who have tremendous advantages, and there are other people who are really behind in they're capable. It's just not a level playing field at all. So
I didn't have the time to read your full report last night, but I did read the executive summary, and that summary was filled with what I think is just a lot of old-fashioned common sense. Can you give us the details, please?
Yeah, I mean, we're really arguing a couple things. We're arguing that parents are, in middle and upper-class communities especially, are trying to do everything for their kid, but they're not really doing what counts. And by everything, I mean, they're trying to get their kids, they're trying to shoehorn their kids into selective colleges, often highly selective colleges. But, you know, we know that selectivity just doesn't matter that much. I mean, this is something that's very convincing in the research, that how selective a college your child goes to is much less important than whether or not they're engaged in college. I mean, if they're curious, interested learners, they're going to do very well in college and beyond. You know, we're also arguing that a lot of parents are taking this as a test of their status, where their kid goes to college, or a test of their achievement. But it is, you know, in our mind, first and foremost, a test of character for parents. You know, it is a time to really get to know who your kid is, to try and understand where they're going to fit and where they're going to thrive, and to really think about how to be an ethical guide, you know, not letting your kids exaggerate or cheat on their applications, not being too involved in writing their essays. I mean, there's an ethical opportunity here, an opportunity for an ethical education that I hope more and more parents are able to seize.
But if the parents are unethical, and obviously some more that we know about from this scandal, and they'll obviously do almost anything to get their kids into a school, how do you reach the kids to teach them ethics? Or some have suggested, and I was surprised by this, do you simply move on, skip over them, and take them out of the process?
Well, I think the parents, there is a small fraction of parents who are doing outright unethical things here. I mean, this is the scandal, again, I think is an outlier. I think it's very extreme. But there are parents who are paying psychiatrists to falsely diagnose their kids as having ADD. There are parents who are getting on their kids' email and writing emails to admissions officers. There are parents who are sabotaging the prospects of other kids who are applying to the same college as their kids' peers. So, you know, there is some bad stuff going on, but I don't think that's the more common problem. I do think the more common problem is the kind of things I'm talking about, which is things like helping too much on an essay or letting your kids fudge some on their college application. So, you know, I think most parents are struggling with this. You know, they want their kids to get in a very selective college. They also don't want their kids to lie or exaggerate or cheat. And, you know, part of what we're trying to do here is to reinforce the part of them that is saying to themselves, I really need to be an ethical person here, and I want my kid to be an ethical person. And the most important thing I can do for my kid is to help my kid be a good person in the world. So that's the part we're trying to reinforce. I do think that there are some parents, as you said, who are unethical, and it's going to be very hard to change those parents. So it's really important if you're, you know, to use schools, sports programs, other opportunities to support kids and becoming good people who care about others, who play by the rules, who are fair, who are honest. You know, all of us as adults, I think, have a responsibility to do what we can in all of our interactions with kids to help raise kids who are caring, good, thoughtful, ethical human beings.
We've been talking a lot about parents, but from your report and from I think what you've been saying, you're also calling for the schools to take a good, hard look at a student's character, right? Or how a disadvantaged student overcomes hardship.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, part of what we're saying here is that, you know, since we released the last report, even before, we've talked to hundreds of high school educators and counselors and college admissions officers and parents and you know, lots of different people. And one of the things that tends to happen is that high schools tend to blame parents. Parents often blame high schools and parents blame college admissions officers. You know, there's a lot of finger pointing that goes on. And we're really trying to make the case that everybody has to do more and do better here. You know, the parents have to do better. College admissions offices need to do better. There are a lot of things they can do. And as you said, high schools need to do better. And, you know, I think high schools sometimes, again, particularly in affluent communities, middle-class communities, are under a lot of pressure from parents. In independent schools, they can be under a lot of pressure from parents to focus on highly selective colleges. And, you know, we're saying that high schools have a responsibility to push back with parents who are really pushing their kids in ways that are either unethical or creating a lot of stress in their kids, too much stress. And it's very important for high schools to push back, I think, with those parents, contacts with parents about what appropriate behavior is in this process. So we are making that case with high schools. And we're also making a case that high schools, you know, again, most fundamental responsibility, parents, schools, look what's going on in the country. You know, we got a lot of antagonism, incivility, bitter fractures in our country. We need to raise kids who are constructive citizens, ethical, caring community members and citizens. And that's high school's primary responsibility. And it's also parents' primary responsibility.
Do you see what is happening now as possibly the tipping point in changing the system?
You know, I think that one of the good pieces of good news here is that this has hit a nerve. I mean, my sense is it's hit a deep nerve in the American public, you know, that we're continuing to talk about this. And the unfairness of it is really, you know, cut to the bone for a lot of people. And so I think there's a lot of energy for change right now. So, and, you know, we're doing all we can. I think all of us should be doing all we can to capitalize on this moment, and to try and enact some real change. I hope, you know, we got to figure out ways to sustain that momentum, because this is a really broken system. And, you know, a lot of us as adults and also as young people can do things to fix it.
Will we be seeing a Turning the Tide 3?
Yeah, you know, I think we're going to have a Turning the Tide 3 and a Turning the Tide 4. I mean, one of the things we want to focus on is getting much better information to low-income kids and working-class kids, especially about the college admission system. And a project we've been assisting Google with, which is about getting better information to kids and to parents. I mean, there's a huge information gap. We have to democratize information here. You know, a lot of kids have college coaches, counselors, tutors, access to a ton of information from their parents. Other kids had really no information. And there are a lot of them who had very little information about colleges. There's one, you know, a lot of schools in this country in low-income communities, there's one guidance counselor for every 1,000 kids. Mm. So we got to get better information to low-income kids about what colleges are committed to their success. So we're going to write a report about that.
I know a few guidance counselors, and I can tell you that they are overwhelmed and overworked, and parents are so demanding nowadays.
Yeah, no, totally. And they're heroes in my mind. They're doing great work, but it's a crazy amount of work we're asking them to do. And again, as an equity matter and as a democratic matter, we got to get more counselors into schools, and we got to do more to support them.
We have about 45 seconds left. For those parents who are listening, for the kids who are listening, who may have a little bit of despair after everything that's gone on in the last 2 weeks, what would be your final words, some advice?
Well, I guess I want to just say two things really quickly. One is that, you know, we have this mantra, this trope that we say we got to do what's best for our kids. And we do have to do what's best for our kids. That's true. But we also got to think about other people's kids. That's the essence of us being moral people as adults, and it's going to be the essence of our kids being moral people. The other thing that I was going to say is that there are a lot of great colleges out there, and people get focused on these highly selective schools, but the truth is that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of great colleges. Kids are doing very well going to those colleges and careers. There's great data about that now. And so your kid can get into a very good college in this country.
Mr. Weisbord, I have to hold you there. Rick Weisbord, lead author of Turning the Tide 2 from the Making Caring Common Project. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We'll be right back.
A pleasure.
This is The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and we are going to continue to talk about the college admissions process, the news that broke last week about how some people have rigged the process. And joining us is Elizabeth Heaton, who is vice president, a college coach for Bright Horizons. They're based out of Watertown, Massachusetts, but they have offices across the country, right?
Yep.
Elizabeth, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. I'm really happy to join you today.
Just to clarify, what does a college coach do?
Well, we are working with families and supporting them in the college process, whether that is figuring out how they're going to pay for it or figuring out how to get in. And we do it in a few different ways. So one of the ways is that there are a number of companies out there who offer our services to their employees as a free benefit. And we primarily work with the parents, helping them help their kids. Mm-hmm. And then we also work with the students directly.
Just out of curiosity, when parents are planning for their kids nowadays to go to college, at what age do they start the planning? When are you brought in?
I would say it runs the gamut. So probably most families engage with us at some point in the student's junior year. But we do have families who come to us in 9th, 10th grade. And I actually welcome that, because the reality is that what you want to cover in those early years is just making good choices that will lead to more opportunities by the time the student is ready to apply. But we have also families who come to us right at the fall of senior year. And we can help at every point. It's just, you know, the earlier you start, we might be able to have more impact, but we could still absolutely help when families are in the midst of the insanity of the process in senior year.
I was telling you before we went on the air that I would hear other parents talking about college and what they were doing to get their kid ready for college. And I mean, we're going back to the 6th, 7th grade and so on. And I'd be standing there looking at them saying, are you kidding me? And they were completely serious and they had it planned out.
Sure.
Is that becoming more of the norm?
We get a handful of calls every year from parents of younger students sort of looking for that. And, you know, what my response is always, well, I can answer some questions that you have, but it's way too soon. And you can't plot it out. We do have kids who maybe start really working intensively in 9th grade with a goal, but a lot of that is going to unfold as you go through school. You might have been an A student in middle school, but once you get to high school, maybe now you're more of an AB student, and mm-hmm. that can change what you're going to realistically be able to look at. You also have kids who are just kind of meandering through the lower grades, and then they get really invested when they get to high school. I think it's way too soon. And I have a 14-year-old freshman in high school, and it's shocking to people. He wasn't in any organized activities until this year.
Right.
There was nothing he was really interested in, and I figured he'll figure it out, and we'll work with whatever we get.
I think that's part of the problem nowadays, because parents are so controlling, at least from what I've seen, and they have to learn to pull back.
Yes.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Well, it is. What I would say about this scandal, to me, almost more than anything, is it's the most egregious example of snow plowing. So I don't know if you've heard that term. People talk about the helicopter parent. This is this desire to essentially completely clear a path for your kid and make it so that there are zero obstacles. But where is it written that you're never going to hear no? And it's not a bad thing to hear no as you go through life.
Right.
And if the first time you hear no is when you're 18, wow, lucky you. That's kind of awesome. But it will set you up for
failure down the line.
Yes.
I think that started so far back when the participation trophies.
Yeah.
You show up and you get a big trophy because you know what? You made the effort to come here today.
Right. I know. I think there are a lot of things that have contributed to it. And I, at the core of it all is really a desire on the parents' part to, you know, do what they can for their child. They want their kids to be happy. We all share that. Mm. But, you know, my philosophy is just that if you can help your kids to find a place where they are feeling confident because they are competent, they're good at what they're doing, that's the place that happiness lies. And along the way to that, there might be some failure. And that's, you know,
that's part of life.
That is part of life.
Did the news surprise you about the scandal?
Yeah. I mean, I have been gone on record saying that I found it completely and utterly shocking. And I do have colleagues who are sort of like, really? But I think what they were saying more than anything or implying was they're not shocked that something like this could happen. I found it shocking because, A, I used to be an athletics liaison when I was at Penn. And, you know, the coaches' jobs depend on fielding a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would never have occurred to me that a coach would put someone on their list of, you know, maybe they had four or five slots, they would use one for a kid who was never even going to compete. That just blew my mind. But the other reason I found it so egregious is these people were using, they could have gone through proper channels to donate money to that the schools could then use to develop programs, and they may have had the same outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it wouldn't be guaranteed. But that's the part just felt so that they went to such illegal lengths that they are now in custody was completely shocking to me.
I have read so many articles in just the last few hours from many columnists and parents who have said, look, I knew this was the system, and this just confirms everything I've been reading, I've been learning the last few years. The system is rigged. Is the system rigged?
You know, I didn't get that question this morning, and someone else did. Is the system rigged? Have the wealthy and the powerful and the famous in this country kind of always had an advantage? Yes. Which system are we talking about? That is sort of the way of the world, if we're really being honest.
Surprise, right?
Yeah, surprise. Why is this a surprise? I think it's not that rigged, and more that it's not, you know, I've heard a lot of people say it's not fair, but it's not designed to be fair, right? You have, depending on the size of an applicant pool, 30 to 40,000 students. Each individual student has a goal of getting into this one school, which has maybe 2,000 spots available, and their own separate set of institutional priorities. How are those two ever going to connect? How is it ever going to seem fair to the vast majority of those applicants for whom there aren't spots are not available? And so I don't know. I don't feel like it's rigged, because also I think it's very interesting that as of yet, there are no admissions officers who've been implicated in this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was doing admissions, we were very, you are looking for reasons to admit, and you got very invested in the students in your applicant pool. I know that all of my colleagues who are all former admissions officers and all of the people who I worked with when I was at Penn and who are now out doing their counselors in school settings, or maybe they're doing something like what I do, that the goal is really to help these students achieve their higher education goals. And some of those kids have a lot of money, and some of them have no money, and a lot of them will live in the middle space. And but they're all interesting people with their own goals and aspirations. So I guess you could walk around and say it's rigged, and that's why this didn't work out for my child. But, you know, you can't control those acceptances that are going to go to people that maybe you have decided yourself are not worthy. But you never know what's going on in someone else's life. You never know what is in that application, what they might have accomplished. And so really what you have to focus and on is what you can control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I talk to families a lot about. Let's not worry about what you worry is happening, and let's focus instead on what you can do. And if you don't like the way that that admission is being done at these schools, one of the hugest pieces of control you have, don't apply. There are more than 4,000 schools in this country. Many of them, 80% in fact, are admitting more than half of their applicant pools. And a huge number of them do their admissions very, very transparently. They will even put on their website, you know, a sliding scale. You have this GPA, you need this test score. As your GPA goes up, the requirements for your testing goes down. You look at that, you say, yep, I'm in there. You apply, you are in. So if it feels so bad, and these are great schools. There are, you know, so like I also feel like we need to get away from the focus always being on this one tiny little group of schools.
And that's what I was talking with my son about. Mm-hmm. It's look, if you don't get into this one school, you're going to end up at still a great mm-hmm. school. So many colleges and universities in the United States are fantastic. And so you don't get into a Yale. You don't get into a Harvard.
Right? Is life ended? How
life
many people
hasn't
in this
ended.
World
you'll
went
be
there?
Fine. You'll yes. be absolutely fine. But it goes back, I think, to what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Parents trying to control it. And for many that I've seen, at least, it isn't the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's the parents who, if a kid doesn't get into some place, it's an admission of failure
yes.
on the parents' part.
Right.
Am I reading too much into that?
No, I see a wide variety of things, right? But I definitely see that, this idea that you're getting graded on your parenting and you get an F if the schools that your child was aspiring to don't happen. And I would love to flip the script and, first of all, accept that this is your child's process, not yours. You know, when I got into college back in the day, the acceptance rate at my alma mater was close to 50%.
Mm.
Well, it no longer is close to 50%. It is in the single digits. And, you know, maybe there was a time in my life where I thought, I want my son to even do better than I did. And I have completely let that go and recognized my son is going to have his own process. And if you could do that as a parent and embrace the idea of fit, embrace the idea of your child finding the place that feels like his people or her people are there. They have the academic programs that your son or daughter is looking for. And it's a place that you can afford or that is maybe going to give your child money so that to make it more affordable. Those are the things that go into a great college process where people walk away feeling really exhilarated by it. And I think the other thing parents need to do is to embrace all of the options on the student's list rather than fixating on one, because it's like anything. If you fixate on one,
mm-hmm.
your kid gets, because what you're saying is basically, I will be most proud of you if you get in here.
Exactly.
Right?
And the stress factor that goes with this nowadays, mm-hmm. how many kids have I seen walking around, lack of sleep, filling out all the admissions forms, going to talk with the colleges, visiting them. They all look like they've aged. Not to mention the parents of age.
Yes.
It's like you know, the kids are walking around. They're like little old men and women.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, the other thing I feel like a lot of times what happens is it becomes all about, oh, my goodness, I want them to like me. They need to like me. And when was the last time you fully engaged with a person who approached you in that way, right? And so it's desperate. You sort of almost want to keep them at arm's length.
Right.
Start asking yourself, do I like this school? Is this school interesting to me? Do they have programs that I want? Approach it more from the perspective, from that perspective. I also feel like it then gets easier to identify the schools that make sense rather than chasing the brand name that all your friends are chasing.
How about with the 4 or 5 minutes that we have left, how about some advice for the parents? If they have a kid now who, let's say they're in middle school and they're making their way into high school, mm-hmm. what should they be thinking about doing over the next few years to help the college process without being overwhelming?
Absolutely. I think really good questions, because the choices you make now will ultimately impact the college process. I think avoiding talking too much about college in the home is a really good idea. Other than maybe that, hey, when it's time for the college process, or, you know, the underlying assumption being that the student is going to go to college, and I am a big fan of college. But making sure that your child is taking all 5 major subject areas all 4 years, that is really something to pay attention to, is and trying to be consistent. So if they are looking to start a language in high school, are they continuing at the one what they did in middle school? And if so, do they really like that language? And if they don't, now's the time to make the switch. That way they could still take a foreign language, take it all the way through, mm-hmm. but they're not going to switch after 2 years because, well, I always hated that language. Well, now you're not showing as much consistency. So really the first couple years are about helping your child make decisions about getting involved in a couple of things, and doing as well as they can do in school. Part of that is often listening to teacher recommendations. If the teacher is saying to you, I don't think your child is going to do well in an honors level math course, it's probably a good idea to listen.
Pay attention.
And not push them to be in the honors math anyway, because right. that leads to the student maybe not feeling as comfortable and competent, and then that can start a spiral. So supporting that, I think, is good.
What about also the option of if a teacher says, look, he or she may need to take a year off, or you know what, maybe college isn't the route for them, maybe trade school or some other option. Should college be the only option out there?
No, for sure it shouldn't be, and it is not right for every student, and it isn't right for every student to go right to college, for sure. But yeah, I think embracing the fact that there are a lot of different paths that students can travel, and you are right. You know, for some kids, maybe that's the military. For some kids, maybe it's trade school. For some kids, maybe it's taking a gap year or a couple of years to go and work. And maybe it's starting at the community college because they're not ready to be away from home, or they just need a break.
Sure.
I think those are all really good paths to explore depending on the student you have, right? The biggest piece of advice I have for parents is, especially as their kids start high school, embrace the student you have, the child you have, and stop thinking about the one you wished that you got, which
it's
I see.
So tough to do.
I know it is.
It is so it difficult is. To do. It truly. I know what you're saying, but
there's a difference between pushing your child to be their best and wanting them to be completely different from who they are. And I do want to stress that, you know, we talk a lot about grades at my house and about effort, because, you know, putting in the effort will yield the best grade that you can get. Mm. Right. And we talk a lot about that. But what I want to make sure is that I'm not expecting him. My son is not going to be a straight A student. He probably could be, but school isn't his thing. And I've learned to accept that. I was a really good student, but that was my thing. It's mm-hmm. not his thing. And that's been a big, important piece of embracing the child I have versus the one that maybe I thought I was going to get when he was born.
You've told us so many great things in this segment. And, you know, what I'm taking out of it, it's almost like the parents have to change their behaviors. We have to have a different outlook. We just have to approach this differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. You're talking about a sea change.
It's tough.
There.
It's tough.
It's going to be very, very tough. We have about 30 seconds left. Is there anything we haven't covered that you could tell us about the college admissions process, what parents should be thinking about? If some students are thinking about this, any final wise words of advice?
Sure. I guess a big thing would be to have a balanced list. Have schools, yes, that might be reaches, but embrace the schools that are going to embrace you. And make sure that you apply to, and show as much love to those schools as maybe the ones that feel more exciting. Mm. And don't get your head turned by the idea that because they're less likely to take you, somehow they're better. Why is that?
And just out of curiosity, how many colleges should a student be applying to?
We suggest a baseline of somewhere between 7 and 9. And a couple of reaches, 3 or 4 matches, and a couple of safeties.
I've enjoyed speaking with you.
I've really enjoyed being here. Thank you for having me.
Elizabeth Heaton is college coach for Bright Horizons, based out of Watertown, Massachusetts. You can find their offices across the United States. Elizabeth, yeah. Thank you once again.
Yes, thanks for having me.
This is The Full Story on WSHU. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. This is The Full Story on WSHU, and let's explore another aspect of the college admissions process, the athletic aspect. And let me introduce you to Wayne Mazzoni. Wayne is the author of a number of books, including Get Recruited, The Definitive Guide to Playing College Sports. And when he's not writing, Wayne Mazzoni is the pitching coach and recruiting coordinator for Sacred Heart University. Wayne, thanks for coming in today.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's just start it off with this. Were you surprised by the scandal?
That's a great question, because I'm sure in all walks of life, in all areas, whether it's sports or admissions, and there's always some sort of scandal. So where there's money and prestige, no, I'm not surprised. Not surprised.
You know, there are a lot of jaded kids and parents out there. They feel that the deck is stacked against them right now. What's your advice as someone who's been doing it for a number of years for them getting a fair shake?
I mean, I think you have to realize that anytime an issue comes up like this, that the amount of percentage of things that are not the way they're supposed to be is extremely small. So 99% of the process is running like it's supposed to be run. And then, of course, you have the outliers. And when it becomes a story like that, of course, it's upsetting, because there are definitely particular people that missed out on an opportunity because someone else got that space. But again, for the greater part of the whole admissions process, the recruiting process, it's pretty much on, you know, it's on the up and up.
You think mostly everything is okay. It's really just, I hate to say, the 1%, the 1%ers who maybe have skewed it a little bit.
I really do. I mean, I've been doing this 25 years and never come across anything fishy.
Anything like this, right?
Never close.
No. I mean, this was, I'm reading about it, and they're talking about some parents possibly paying up to, I think it was $1.2 million to get their kid into.
And I'm unbelievable.
For the average person thinking about that number, that's crazy.
It's crazy. That's just society getting skewed, that it matters so much to get your kid into a certain college that you're basically willing to do anything. And if you have the resources, that anything is $1.2 million, I guess.
And the statistics bear it out, that if the kid doesn't want to go there and apply him or herself in the first place, getting into a prestigious university won't mean a thing.
I think what we find out as, and it's become a big story in a lot of ways. I've read in USA Today, and my wife buys books all the time about how to let kids figure things out on their own and let them struggle. And I think what parents are doing too much is trying to pave the way too easily for the children. And it's the parents, obviously, in this case, are to blame.
All right. So let's talk about the athletic part of this. You talk about parents paving the way, and I have seen over the last number of years parents trying to do that for their kids. When it comes to different types of sports, what should parents be thinking about, watching out for, in terms of setting their kids up for maybe playing in high school and then maybe after that?
Okay. How much time do you have? I mean, the reality is, number one, the kid needs to have a passion for it, okay? And all too often, the parent has the passion for it and the child really doesn't. So number one is to figure out, does this child really want to do this in college? Do they absolutely love everything? Do they love the losses? Do they love the film study? Do they love the traveling? Do they love all the practice? Because when you get to college, it's incredible, especially at the Division I level. You'll spend more time in your sports endeavors than you probably will with anything else. So number one job of a parent is, are they committed to it? Do they really, really want to do it? And then after that, parents need to understand the process. And there's so many things we could get into, but it's really two things that they should immediately be doing. Number one is finding out what type of school this, you know, your son or daughter likes, as if the sport wasn't to work out. So what do they want to study in? What are their grades? What part of the country? What size school? Do you want to be in a city or the suburbs? What do they want? And generally, the only way to do that is by visiting. You can look in books and online all day, but until you step foot on a campus, it's really hard to tell. And then the second, which is definitely the harder part, is how good is my son or daughter at their sport? Because every parent overestimates how good their kids are because we love our kids. Right. I have kids and I do the same thing. And Lord knows my dad did that to me. Mm. Thought I should have went for two sports at Notre Dame and I went to Gettysburg, a Division III school. So I think parents don't really understand where their child stacks up in terms of college. And then you spend a lot of time trying to get these elite level athletic programs interested in your son or daughter, and you're just absolutely wasting time because it'll never work out there.
Mm. So athletics first, make sure that the kid loves the sport, make sure that the kid loves the campus, knows what he or she wants to study, and then if they're good enough, get on the team.
Okay, now you just glossed over the whole recruiting process, meaning it would be fantastic to say my son wants to play soccer at you know, University of Virginia, and okay, they just go on the team. It's incredibly, incredibly
right.
Nuanced, and the percentage of high school athletes that play in college is about 7. So the number of kids across all sports going on to play at any level of college is about 7%.
7%, that's the number.
Yeah, so 93% will play intramurals or club, but never a formal sport.
So even if you're really good on your high school team and you think you have a shot at playing in college,
there's a decent chance you do not. And again, because kids and parents get skewed by this kid being pretty good in the high school program or maybe even the club program. But the jump from high school to the Division III level is a really big gap that most people don't know about. They just think Division III is
a walk-on.
They think it's 13th grade. I'll just keep continuing to play. And it's not. It's not.
It's actually very competitive once you get there, and some people don't understand that the Division III coaches are just as passionate about what they do compared to the Division I, and it's important for them and for the school and for the teammates.
Absolutely, and usually they learn that by the process of trial and error. Like, I've had so many meetings with kids over the years that, you know, I've been at mostly Division I schools, and they'll say, well, I'm not sure it's going to definitely work out for my son with you, but I know for sure he's got these colleges, you know, in his pocket. I said, you just don't know because you have not seen. That's in essence the problem. Most high school kids and parents have not seen a Division III contest. It doesn't make the TV. They don't go to the game. So they have this idea of what that next level is like, but they've never seen it.
So how do you get the parent? Well, first, I'm assuming that you have to start with the parents, right? With getting them to be realistic, because the kids are learning from them. And if they're hearing from the parents, you're good enough, you're going to be Arizona State, you're going to be going down to Florida, Alabama, and all the rest of these things, the kids are going to be inclined to say, yeah, my parents know what they're talking about.
Yeah. And then they learn, you know, the annals of are filled with stories of kids who thought they were going to go and were on the right track and literally never heard from one college coach ever and didn't get recruited at all and didn't play in college. So when I'm doing an interview like this, I always have to think about which hat I'm wearing, okay? Meaning I have a book, I go to high schools, I lecture kids and parents on what they should be doing to move this process forward, okay? That's one side. But then the other side is my day-to-day job of actually finding players and how I go about finding players and then recruiting them. And not in generally until later in the process do the parents get involved whatsoever. I find a kid that I like with the grades, and that process moves forward that way. So as you're asking the questions, I have to think, you know, am I the one who's educating the people, or am I the one here doing my job on an everyday basis?
So give us some of the inside information. How do you go about finding the kids that would fit your program?
Terrific question. So generally, it's going to be one of probably three ways where you first go from not having heard about a person. So someone out there is a junior in high school. We don't know who it is. Either through maybe an email or a video. That might be one way, which we get a lot of, and most of the ones we get aren't worth following up on for whatever reason. Number two is we might go out to games or tournaments or events that will see the kids on the field. My favorite way is when I get a recommendation from a high school coach.
Mm.
High school coach will call me, send me a message, say, listen, I know about your program. I know this kid. This is a kid you should come look at. So step number one is, how does that person get onto your radar screen? And then number two is us going to see whether they have the talent enough to be able to play at this level. If they check out that they have the talent, very next step is get a transcript and let's see if this person is going to be admissible and hopefully also qualify for some financial aid to offset the cost of the school.
What happens a lot of times when someone contacts you and they're thinking, okay, I could be a good fit at Sacred Heart, and you're looking at their video or their email or the transcript and say, look, you just don't fit here. How do you break that news to them? How do you get the message back?
You know, it's the answer is two-part. There'll be a lot of kids I just don't respond to because I'd say I get 30 to 35 a day. So I'm not
that many.
Absolutely. And right now, here we are in March of 2019. Right now is the flurry of the seniors who now have not gotten any recruiting interest, who are now panicking and sending, oh my God, I'll do anything to play on your team, you know, next fall. And do you have any spaces left? When we've been done recruiting for that class for quite a while. So for those kids, I'll simply say recruiting is filled. You know, I hope it works out elsewhere. The other ones that I get, maybe some of the younger kids where we're still recruiting those classes, if I could tell that this kid, you know, is not good enough, I probably either won't respond. Sometimes when a kid, let's say we run our own prospect camps where kids come in specifically to be looked at by us at Sacred Heart, every one of those kids I'll respond with a brutally honest evaluation. And I say to them at the end of this event, I will respond to you with everything that I thought about your talent level, but be prepared because I'm going to tell you exactly like it. So now I'm not the be all end all, but I'll say, I don't think you could, at this moment, I don't think you could play at any level of college.
You like to speak truth.
Speak the truth because it just makes it easy. It just easy. And the reality is, what would I want for my child? I want my child to go somewhere and be told, you're not fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because the right kid does what? The right kid gets faster. The right kid starts eating right. The right kid starts to lift. The right kid wakes up his alarm half an hour earlier and goes runs outside his house. So you give them honest feedback, and then you see what they do with it.
So I'm a parent. I'm a kid. I'm listening to this interview right now, and I'm thinking, I love swimming. I love basketball, whatever. I'm a sophomore in high school. Is that too early to start thinking about where to go to college, or what do you recommend?
I love your questions. These are great. I would give two pieces of advice to people in that boat. Number one is enjoy the present moment. Enjoy each day. Become great because you love it, because you want to practice with your friends and play with your friends. You playing high school sports is the most pure, awesome time, community-based. My son goes to Fairfield Prep. Tonight, there's 1,000 kids busing or training it up to Yale to watch the hockey finals tonight. My son doesn't play hockey. He doesn't like, he's going there, team spirit.
It's such a great thing to watch.
It's awesome. So number one is to just enjoy the present moment. Never be playing the sport, and many do. They play by going, geez, I hope I play well so this college likes me. I hope I score points today so this college likes me. It's just putting the cart before the horse. Play for the purity of it, the enjoyment, mm-hmm. the challenge of it.
The love of the game.
The love of the game. Certainly, though, as a sophomore in high school and you're serious about playing in college, you should be probably doing those two things I mentioned. Start getting an idea of what types of colleges. There's about 3,500 colleges that have sports. You need to start narrowing things down. Even if you said, you know what, I'm a Northeast kid. I want to stay in the Northeast. You took 3,500 colleges and you narrowed it down to about 800. Mm. That's a big, all right, I'd like to be in a medium-sized school, 5 to 10,000 students. I don't want it tiny. I don't want it huge. The list starts shrinking down. It's like looking for a job. People don't say, I'll do anything for work anywhere in the United States. They say, I want to work in radio. I want to be in Connecticut. And then all of a sudden, 10, 15 places where you could work pop out, and then you start to do sort of a job search.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very similar in the sporting world. What are the right colleges for me? And then within those colleges, am I a high-level D1 player? Am I a lower-level D1 player? Am I Division II? Am I Division III? Or am I, what I say, Division IV, which is those 93% that aren't going to play in college?
Maybe playing the club team.
Which is awesome.
Right.
You know, you go to certain colleges, some of these bigger state schools, the club sports, the intramural sports, are as competitive as you'd find in high school. I mean, they're intense level of sports.
Absolutely. Do you ever run into situations where a kid actually may come to Sacred Heart or another university and after a while say, you know what, I can't handle both athletics and academics. I'm simply going to have to drop out of this sport. Does that occur?
I would say it does, and it's probably maybe one kid a year. And it's so many factors. It's like the kid's hurt and playing hurt all the time and it's not fun. Or maybe he's just sort of buried on the roster, not getting a lot of playing time and going, holy mackerel, I'm putting a lot of time into the sport. I'm not playing and yet my grades are suffering, or I could be doing an internship, or I could be working. So yes, at the end of the year, you'll get a kid that comes up and just says, you know, I've enjoyed myself, but I could see I'm not going to be the key guy on the team next year, and it's just I'm going to pursue something else. And you know, we part, you know, ways with good feelings, hopefully.
I have a question that's a bit out of left field, but over the last number of years, I've been to a number of high school games and other events, and I've seen the very, very aggressive parents whose kids are actually very talented. And obviously they're going on to play in college, probably at a D1 level or D3. When you're doing recruiting and you're looking at some of those talented kids, do the parents' personalities ever play a role in this, or do you somehow exclude that?
That's a really good question. I would say it's rare where a parent scares you off enough that you would not recruit that child. Very rarely. And it's usually something kind of over the top where maybe the parent's doing all the communicating completely, all the emails, all the phone calls, and you're like, sir, I'm not recruiting you. I'm you're involved.
Your kid can pick up the phone.
Yes, your kid can be involved. And that's a little bit, again, of that worry. We're trying to recruit, you know, in my case, you know, obviously baseball, young men that are going to be able to take care of themselves here. And when the mom or dad does everything, and I watch that sometimes. I'll go to games, get there an hour early, and watch if the kid's mom is carrying the gear from the car to the field, hugely alarmed by that. Mom's doing enough. You know, dude, take your own gear, and how about putting the dishes away after dinner?
Snowplow parents, helicopter parents.
Yes.
We have to do everything for them, right?
I mean, it's hard because I'm right there. So I've got a freshman and a junior, and it's like I've actually cleaned up their room sometimes because I can't stand it. I'm OCD with, and then literally throwing the stuff back where it was because I know I'm making life too easy. So I'll clean it up and then dump a hamper out.
Then you put the stuff back in?
Yes, I do. Yes.
We have about a minute and a half left. I know there are people who are listening to this, writing things down. If you had a list of the top five things the parents should be thinking about, mostly the parents will be listening right now. What are those five?
All right. So number one is make sure your kid truly loves it. Sometimes they get caught up in the system where they all play soccer and everyone thinks, I want to play Division I because the other five kids that I hang out with all the time want that. Maybe you don't want it. Maybe you'd rather play the violin or go be on a climbing team, or maybe, you know, so you have to really know what you want. So that's number one. If the kid definitely wants it, there should be a constant development plan, meaning how are they getting faster, stronger, more skilled? How are they getting better at their sport? Number three is they certainly need to be focusing on academics, because the better your academics are, the more opportunities there are at colleges, plus the more financial aid that's available by having, you know, better academics. And then probably that last piece is come up with some workable list of schools that you think makes a fit now, and then start, you know, reaching out to those schools and or attending their camps or saying to those coaches, listen, I'm sure you hear from kids like me all the time, but what would you like from me? Do you want a video? Do you want to talk to my high school coach? What would you like to at least give me an evaluation? You can't promise that you get recruited, but you could at least say, you know, if Northeastern, you're interested in playing Northeastern soccer, your goal is to get Northeastern to give you a yes or a no. And that would be probably the next step.
Full disclosure, I met you a year ago. I was not doing this program back then, so it's not an endorsement or whatever, but I saw you speak to a number of high school students. It was a great speech. I appreciate the advice. Wayne Mazzoni is the pitching coach and the recruiting coordinator for Sacred Heart University. Wayne, thank you. This was great. Thank you for all the good advice.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That is it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.